You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt. It's good to have you back, mister.
It's good to be back. I mean, I know that I've only taken 1 week off, but because we kind of, we did a rock block of recording episodes in 1 day, I feel like I've been away for an entire month, even though I've only been gone for one episode.
Right. But technically, like, for us, it's been 2 weeks because we did an episode in advance. We were going to try to get ahead, and then you had to go on your away mission, and, well, that fell off the wayside. And so we are back on track now.
We are back on track. And while I've been gone, we've gotten quite a number of reviews. We've gotten quite a lot of people emailing us and tweeting us and talking to us. It's just a lot of commotion going on in the TTJ biosphere.
Yeah, we have a wonderful active listener base that keeps us entertained, keeps us on our toes, and we always appreciate the feedback. So thank you to those of you who have written in. We always try to reply personally to those, or if you're tweeting at us, what have you. We are reading.
We are reading and we are listening.
Yes.
Today's episode is something that we don't normally tackle onto the journey, and I don't think a lot of people like to tackle, because what we're going to talk about today is dealing with the afterlife in Voyager, and some other Star Trek references might slip in there too. And, you know, we're going to talk about things that actually were the afterlife or were they the afterlife, and talk about things that where the afterlife is mentioned or it was a fake out, you know, or you know,
psych,
things of that nature. And, you know, Char and I figured that you and I could talk about how some of this, what this means to us, and maybe even like our personal lives will seep in, as it always does, into the journey. And also, I just want to start right off the bat, whenever you talk about something like this, whether it's online or in a podcast, on a show, in a movie, you're going to say things that are different to what certain people believe. I mean, I'm going to say some things that I believe. Char, you're going to say some things that you're going to believe, and we'll probably disagree. And so we just want to say from TTJ that this is just an intellectual discussion. We're not emphasizing the importance of needing to think that there's an afterlife or an emphasis on a particular afterlife. So we're not endorsing anything or discrediting anything. I just wanted to get that out of the way, that we're talking about afterlife, so let's not get so touchy.
Please, no flame wars, no fights. This is all speculative, and we're just going off of what was portrayed on the show. And it's not something that we're going to say was set in stone at all.
At all. This is just a fun conversation about fictional afterlives and real afterlives, or whether you think that they're real or fictional. It's completely up to you. It's just a conversation.
Remember, it's science fiction, and your mileage might vary. Let's all take it for a grain of salt. We ought to mention my co-host last week, Philip Gilfus, who came up with the topic. And so thanks again, Philip, for filling in while Tristan had to be away on the away mission. And I'm so glad you brought the shuttlecraft bag without a scratch. It's a nice welcome change.
Well, I might have to take it out here real soon again. You know, it's nice to actually get one back instead of just having to piece it together after Chakotay's done with it.
Every single time.
Let's just go ahead and kick this off. We don't have to go down an episode list or anything like that, but we can just kind of riff and talk about when it was mentioned. And I think one of the biggest ones in Star Trek has to be the episode Coda.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what this whole episode is about, right? It's this guy posing as Janeway's father who wants to, I don't know, like, I think in our context, it wants to eat her soul.
Well, how about you run down the episode for those who might not remember it?
Okay, well, what happens is Janeway and Chakotay are on a away mission together. Which is really strange, because when do the captain and first officer go on an away mission together? But this is how we make this whole thing happen. And they're going to some planet. There is an ion storm. A lightning bolt hits the shuttlecraft and it crashes, rendering Janeway unconscious. Chakotay performs mouth-to-mouth, or CPR, as the more technical term applies. And we think that she's revived, and then they start going into some weird time loop where they're experiencing their conversation in the shuttlecraft over and over again, and things start to get a little weird. And then all of a sudden, midway through the episode, she sees her father, or what we eventually find out to be as someone posing as her father, basically trying to convince her that she's dead so that he can eat her.
So he can eat her soul.
Yes. And Janeway eventually figures this out after he puts her through a memorial service and watches the crew eventually give up on her. And they start to move on and all that, trying to get her to go with him so that he can eat her. And it all ends up with, go back to hell, coward.
This was episode 315. This was written by Jerry Taylor and directed by Nancy Malone. So this is an episode written by a woman, directed by a woman, starring a woman.
That's right. Ladies rule on Voyager.
Ladies rule on Voyager and in Star Trek.
Yes, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention the very end, where Chakotay brings Janeway a rose for surviving, basically. Mm-hmm. And she says, I cheated death. Let's go to Lake George and sail on a boat together, because that's totally platonic. Totally platonic.
Seriously, okay? Like, they're going to go sail together, just the two of them. I know friends go...
A moonlight sail.
And it's just like, oh yeah, we're totally just friends.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, this is a date, especially with that big grin that Janeway has as she exits the ready room. It's like she's practically giddy as a schoolgirl, ready to skip her way out over to the holodeck. She's practically running out of there. Let's go, let's go, let's go.
I bet you that they had a secret open relationship.
You think so?
That, okay, no, like, I don't know if I actually believe this, but I just like talking about Janeway / Chakotay. So here's the thing. Yeah. There's so much sexual tension. There's so many, like, they have dinner together all the time, mm-hmm. and they go sailing together. They go hang out together. Now, obviously, this is just friends. You could, like, twist this into any fashion that you want. But there's so many times that the touch lingers a little too long and they drop a few mm-hmm. double entendres and everything like that. But the thing is, she has to keep up appearances. So, like, she can't do this because she's the captain. And so part of me wants to believe that they actually had a relationship going on, but they had an understanding that if somebody else came along, if some alien came along, that they would put the relationship on pause, because that's what you'd have to do in order for the crew not to find out.
So what you're saying is that for a good portion of the show, Janeway and Chakotay were bed buddies.
Well, I wouldn't put it that way.
I was trying to keep it clean.
I would not put it in that way, in any way, fashion, or form. I've been rewatching Friends.
Okay. Because it's on Netflix.
And so I just kind of had this resurgence, because I watched it here and there, like when I was growing up and everything like that. But the girl and I, we started from episode one and went all the way to the end, I think in like 1 month. We watched all 10 seasons in 1 month.
Your internet provider must hate you.
Oh, I drain Comcast hard and I don't even care.
Yeah, good. Screw them.
Screw Comcast. And there's this underlining thing between Joey and Phoebe. And for those of you who don't know anything about Friends, just tune out for a second. there's this underlying thing between Joey and Phoebe where it's just they drop these hints every now and again that they're attracted to each other or that something might be going on. They just have this special kind of relationship that's really cool. And apparently the actors thought so as well. And they begged the writers and the producers at the end of the series, towards the end of season 10, to say they've had a relationship all along, where they catch them in bed together and they're like, how long has this been going on? They're like, since the pilot.
Kind of like Dwight and Angela on The Office.
Yeah, kind of like Dwight and Angela. But the thing is, like, they've had relationships throughout the show. And so it was just understood uh-huh. that when that relationship was going on, they were on pause. And that's how I imagine Janeway and Chakotay sometimes.
Well, yeah, there is so much subtext there that it makes perfect sense. I mean, there's a reason why there are thousands of fanfics out there about Janeway and Chakotay still being written, new stuff coming out every day.
Yes. Yeah. And for those of you who are saying like, oh, that's just because the captain's a woman. No, look at Sisko and Kira. That never happened.
Beverly and Jean-Luc.
Beverly and Jean-Luc. Yeah. See, that's the difference is that like, it's not because it's the captain commander aspect. It's just it's the chemistry aspect.
Yeah. I mean, I think as viewers, we see this, we latch onto it and our imaginations run wild and we have to get this out of our system somehow. But I don't know. I find it kind of a fascinating idea that maybe Janeway and Chakotay had that open relationship. And then if the alien of the week came along and had a little kiss action going, it was okay. It was all right. They can totally play friend zone. And then if something else happens later on after dinner, they have dessert and it's cool.
And it's cool. Yeah. I mean, like, hey, it's the 24th century. It's, you know, whatever.
Right. Yeah. I mean, takes all kinds, right?
Leave it to us where we started an afterlife conversation where we're talking about death, resurrection, heaven and hell. And then we're like, no, Janeway and Chakotay totally have feelings for each other.
Yeah, they were totally doing it. Well, yes, you get me started on Janeway Chakotay, and you started it, by the way.
I know.
This is going to happen.
I totally take responsibility, but let's go back to it. Let's talk about Coda.
Let's talk about Coda.
So here's the thing, is that this is a very Star Trek view of the afterlife, I think, where this happens so many times in the original series where there's some sort of god figure or some sort of afterlife going on, and it turns out to be a machine or it turns out to be an alien. And of course, it's not supernatural because it's just natural beyond what we understand. And so that's very Star Trek. And I think we need to kind of go back to the beginning a little bit and talk about Gene Roddenberry. Gene Roddenberry was a humanist, atheist, or agnostic, whatever you want to call it. He was very much about what propels the human race forward on its own, as the human race pulling itself up by its own bootstraps, not needing God or any kind of deity or gods plural or anything like that, because he didn't believe in them or he didn't believe in any proof of them. Mm-hmm. And so he just thought that we are a marvelous race, but we have a long way to go. And we don't need a deity to reaffirm our place in the universe. And so you see a lot of that in Star Trek history. And even, some of you might not know this, but a lot of Star Trek fans do know this, where the original plot for Star Trek the Motion Picture was the Enterprise crew finding God and then killing God.
Oh, wait, so then they just saved it for Star Trek V?
Yeah, it was very much like that. But the thing is, like, it was really God.
Okay.
As in, like,
which,
the person...
I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's kind of risky business because even on Earth, we have multiple versions of a God or several gods. And so who's to say there is just one God if there is a God?
And even beyond that, like, the producers as well as, like, Shatner and Nemo are like, you can't do that. like first off, you're not going to find God. Whether he exists or not, you're not going to find him that way. And you can't kill God. Like, they were just, like, the producers and the actors were just, like, pulling their hair out. Like, you can't do this. And so, like, that was the beginning of Roddenberry being edged out more and more when it came to the movies.
Yeah, probably just stemming from the fact of his belief that he was an atheist, and therefore human beings didn't need a god, and so be it. He'd be gone.
Yeah, he very much wanted to make that statement. And so once you realize that the creator of Star Trek had that view of a creator, it kind of trickled down throughout the entire series and multiple series. And I feel like that's where this comes from. And we see that personified in Coda, where it's like, you know, you're not really my father. You're not really a deity. This isn't really the afterlife. This is all just some sort of trap.
Right. We don't really know where this being lives, whether it's in subspace or some other kind of dimension. I mean, it's not the physical world as we know it, I guess, because he's manifesting in her consciousness. That's how I understand it anyway. I mean, it's kind of confusing all this, what's happening, because a lot of it is being projected through Kathy's mind.
So much of it is even up, like, even with Afterlife, it's all up in the air, but even it's even more so because it's all inside her head.
Right. So this could just be Catherine's projection of what she considers or what might have been the afterlife, or what she could conceive of it being, what she thinks is the afterlife, or what would be the afterlife if she were really experiencing it, and the alien's just tapping into that.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what else he does with anybody else? I mean, it's left kind of mysterious, I think, for a reason. Just because the afterlife is such a vague concept, and it's really, it can't be any more or less than what we make of it ourselves, whatever we define it to be. And that can be so variant, whether it exists or not entirely. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing. It's kind of a mind bender. What's really going on here?
Yeah.
I definitely think this is a better handling, though, of Star Trek handling the afterlife than Gene Roddenberry, what he wanted to do with the motion picture. I mean, this is definitely much more straightforward and more easily explained in sense, okay, you're a life form.
Yeah, you're an alien. You're trying to consume my essence.
Yes.
But before we go on to some more meatier topics within Voyager, I'd like to get some of the minor stuff out of the way just because it's, you know, it's just not that interesting.
Okay, do it.
We'll go to the episode Emanations.
Okay, right.
And this one is where, this is episode early on. This is in first season, episode 9, and they're trying to investigate some sort of new element, and they find a whole bunch of bodies, and somehow Harry gets zapped into a different world, and it's about euthanasia, basically. And,
essentially, yeah.
Like, when a person is sick or near death or a drain on society, they're going to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe that euthanizing them in this coffin-like device is going to transport them to the next emanation. And Harry takes his Federation beliefs to the system and goes like, oh my God, this is wrong. You know, this can't happen and everything like that. Anyway, he gets away and it's a race called the Venori. And so, I mean, that's one, they believe that you would go into another realm, that's a very generalized concept of the afterlife where, whether it's you take your body or you don't take your body, you just take your soul, your life essence, whatever you want to call it, go into the next emanation. But it looks like they'd have to be killed first by these little two probes that hit you in the neck.
Right.
And this is also the episode where we find out that the Okampans believe in the concept of a soul.
Right.
And they call it the Komra.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though that's the extent of what we know about their concept of the afterlife, because Kes just brought it up and said like, oh yeah, we totally have a soul and it's called the Komra and it's released into the afterlife. So we don't know anything about their religion or if they even have a religion or what it is.
Right. Might not necessarily tie into a religion. It might just be that they believe in life after physical death.
Right. Right. And it's so vague. And I mean, they even kept the next emanation really vague. So there's not too much to talk about outside of that episode about the concepts.
Really.
They just really believe that there is a place where you go and it's different.
Yeah, and it's a happy place. I think this culture, by and large, I mean, aside from the character who didn't want to die, I think generally the society thought, well, you're going to a better place. This is a good thing.
Right.
And
right.
That's a very human concept, I think. Or maybe it would be a universal thing where we want to believe that there is something better once we leave our physical bodies. If there is a life after death, we do want it to be a happy place, right? Because if we're there for a so-called eternity, well, it better be good.
It better be good. And if not, I mean, that's why we have certain warnings in certain religions. So like, if you're
that's
good,
right,
you'll go to the good place. And if you're bad, you'll go to the bad place. But speaking
right
of good places and something that's a little bit more meat to the bones, let's talk about the Great Forest.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about the Great Forest because I just watched Mortal Coil not that long ago.
I love this episode. I love it when Star Trek deals with spirituality and religion and death and the heavy stuff. And I think that's why I love Deep Space Nine so much, because, you know, Deep Space Nine has all those themes in abundance.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you don't really see it too terribly much in Voyager, but when you do, I feel like they tackle it quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is an example.
Yeah, this is an example. For those of you who don't remember, the Great Forest basically is the afterlife for the Talaxians. And
yeah,
it's beautiful, and there's a guiding tree, and it says that you're going to meet all your family members there and your ancestors there, and you're just going to hang out and live there under this guiding tree and, like, in this great forest. And it's very much, it just very much sounds like what many people's view of the afterlife is here. Like, those of you who believe in heaven or some derivation of heaven or a different kind of concept than heaven, it feels like, okay, we're going to go to a nice place, we're going to be with our family, and it's going to be good. Like that's what people want,
right,
to believe.
We're going to live happily ever after.
Yeah. And I think what's great about this episode and how it deals with it is, and this was written by Brian Fuller, by the way, that it deals with the problems of an afterlife or the believing in an afterlife. It's not so much like Coda where it's like, oh, come into the afterlife. Oh, it's fake. You're an alien. This one is about the belief of an afterlife. And I think that's
right.
That's why this is just such a great episode, is because it can't be proven or disproven, just like in real life.
Right. And we watch Neelix in this episode go through the experience of, well, he feels that everything that he has come to believe all along is wrong because he didn't go to the Great Forest when he died. And then when he was brought back, there was no tree. There was no family. Why didn't he go? He was dead, right? What happened? And so suddenly everything is turned upside down for Neelix and we watch him deal with this. I think that's a fascinating thing to watch and a good challenge.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's the crux of Star Trek. That's why Star Trek is awesome, because that's where the story is. It's not him going into a shuttlecraft and trying to find a nucleon beam that will open up a hole to get him to the Great Forest. No, it's the fact that he died and he's trying to reconcile his own beliefs and to reconcile his place in the universe. That's where Star Trek lies. That's where the story is. And when I was younger and watching this and they did the recreation on the holodeck, which I thought was so macabre. But Chakotay's like, you know, hey, you know, you were only dead for 18 hours. I mean, why would you go to the Great Forest? And Neelix is like, oh, something would have happened by then. It's too long. From my perspective, even from a young person's perspective, I'm like, well, why would your family bring you if they knew you weren't going to stay?
You know, like, right.
I'm just kind of like, if they're in the afterlife, you'd think that there was some sort of omniscience going on, that they can see things that we can't perceive. And so they would know that, oh, it's not his time. So why would they bring him to the forest? And then I'm like, boom, end of episode.
Right. Yeah. I think it is a very commonly held belief that if there is an afterlife and after we've died, we're going to go there right away.
See, I never understood that. See, okay, from my religion, I am a Protestant. And I used to be a very specific sect of Protestantism called Nazarene, which I'm not really so much anymore. But it's pretty much like once you say Protestant, it's just like, oh, it's just like little details that differentiate us. But there's this belief, there's a duality of belief about, okay, well, if you die, then you go to heaven. Immediately when you die, you go to heaven. But there's this other belief because of a few passages of scripture in the Bible that if you die, your soul is kind of held in the ether until the resurrection of Jesus Christ.
Ah.
And so right now, for people who believe that, they don't believe that anybody's in heaven right now. That everyone's just waiting until once Jesus comes back, that's when everybody's released to heaven. And so we all get there. Like, whether you died 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, or just right now, you all get there at the same time.
I gotcha. Okay. That's interesting. Because I am not a Protestant. In fact, I am not religious. I do not subscribe to any religion, but I do have a sense of spirituality that doesn't kind of fit the mold of any particular organized religion. I'll say that.
It's Star Trek. You can just say that.
I can say whatever I want, man. It's our podcast. I have no shame about that. That's what works for me. And I do find it interesting, though, that religion has so many different ways that it unfolds. Little technicalities spawn into so many different variants. And yet, I mean, at the core of it, I mean, it's very much, I would want to say, for the big stuff, very much the same. As far as core beliefs go, there are a lot of similarities.
Yes, I would say that there's a lot of similarities. Like, being one of those people who has studied religion his entire life and studied other religions his entire life and very much his own, from an outside perspective, it's easy to say, oh, all religions are the same. Everything's the same and everything like that. But you are right that core beliefs are very similar, but there are a lot of things that are fundamentally different once it means something to you. And I'm not saying you're saying the opposite. I'm not saying that at all. It's just like once it means something to you, those little differences is the difference between a mountain and a molehill. You know,
No, I understand what you're saying. You're absolutely right. That's why there's so many conflicts between religions.
Exactly. And I want to know, with Talaxian, like they say, it's a Talaxian religion. I want to know, when you say human religion, you're like, well, there's quite a few of those.
Right.
So like, I would wish that there was another Talaxian who would come in and say, you know what? I believe that the guiding tree is actually a maple tree. And
or what if it's not a forest at all? What if it's a beach?
Yeah, it's a beach. And so you don't actually reach there until you're dead for the 21-hour mark. So I was just waiting for that to happen because, you know, that's what would happen in real life.
Yeah, here on Earth, it certainly would. Yes.
You have the guy who comes in, well, I believe. And it's like, okay, all right, thank you.
Yeah, okay, all right, we get it. No, that would have been kind of interesting had we had a conversation between Neelix and, say, one of his old traitor friends or something like that.
Yeah. But how are we going to raise the children? So, okay, so we talked about the Great Forest and the Guiding Tree and everything like that. There's really only one other huge mention. I mean, like, we could talk about the Vulcan Katra, because that's talked about in Innocence very briefly.
A little bit, but that's much more Star Trek III.
It's very much the movies and outside of Voyager, so I don't really feel it has a place here. But no. One thing that does have a place is Grethor.
That's right. Yeah, Barge of the Dead.
The honorable warriors go to Stovokor when they die, and the dishonorable ones are sent to Grethor. And in this episode, B'Elanna experiences kind of an out-of-body experience, and she has this vision. She doesn't know if she's dead. She doesn't know if she's alive. But she's like, oh, holy crap, like, I was in Grethor. I died, and I was in Grethor. I didn't go to Stovokor. I didn't go to heaven. I didn't go to wherever we believe, I didn't go to the black nothingness. I went to Grethor, and I saw my mom there. And
right, yeah, she is in Grethor.
And so that's the crux of the episode, is that it's B'Elanna realizing that her mother is dead, and is not in Stovokor, is in hell, killing on hell, and she has to go there and save her. So in this episode, B'Elanna goes to hell, like freaking Dante, to save her mother. This is epic, and it's in season 6, episode 3. And she's like, okay, I want to do this. I want you guys to stop my heart so that I can go to Grethor. And Jane was like, no, don't, no. And Tom is like, there has to be some other way that you can, you know, discover your religion. Can't you, like, go to church or something?
Right, I love that line. Because, I mean, he's kind of freaking out. And she's just busy lighting candles, getting ready to go on this quest. And then he says that line, and it's fantastic.
It's so great. And so she's on the boat. She's on the boat with a guy who navigates it to Grethor. And so they have these questions about what it means to be a Klingon and what it means to be a warrior and what it means to bring honor to your family and to your race. And you have this battle between mother and child about what's appropriate and what's not. And we've talked about Barge of the Dead a lot on this show. And that scene where she's encircled by the people that mean the most to her in her life, where she has the sword and she's like, what am I supposed to be? You know, am I supposed to be a good officer, a good daughter, a good lover? What am I supposed to be? I don't know who I'm supposed to be for you people. I love that moment and actually wrote a short play based off of that moment and presented it in school.
Oh, did you? Wow. Okay. High school, college?
College.
Nice.
I got a really good grade on it. And I didn't tell them that it was inspired, at least, by B'Elanna in Star Trek.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, there's a lot of introspection for B'Elanna in this episode. But what I find even more interesting is the fact that Klingon religion has a concept that we can easily relate to, where it's heaven or hell.
Right.
That you go to one of those two places. And, of course, with the Klingon spin, what your family does also affects whether you go to one place or the other. So B'Elanna, being kind of the anti-Klingon, or at least wanting to be, had an effect on where her mother was placed.
Mm-hmm.
And then B'Elanna has to atone for it. And so it ties into the whole honor thing that Klingons hold so dear and sacred. And that makes a lot of sense to me. How about you?
I feel like the Klingon race was much more like the old Christians of yore. I feel like there's a lot of that where when you look back at medieval times and you have Christian armies, like literal Christian armies, where they would hold crosses and go into battle and scream, God wills it, as they go into battle and kill people. I feel like Klingons were very much this way, where they feel spiritual in killing someone and defeating their enemy. And I feel like they have a lot of what current human beliefs and old human beliefs that 24th century humans don't have, where they're spiritual, they pray, they light the candles, and they believe in monogamy, they believe in sex with your mate, and that's it. And so it's just, there's so much of the Klingon religion and way of life that I see in old style humans. And because I think back to where Worf and Jadzia are having a conversation about marriage, and about how Worf sees it as a spiritual journey. He says, he's like, no, we're two souls joined together on a spiritual journey. And that's how I view it. And that's how a lot of older humans and Christians viewed it. And then Jadzia's like, you may want to go on a spiritual journey. I just want to get married. And there's so many times when Worf, I know that Jadzia is not a human, but she shares a lot of current human beliefs in 21st century. And so I feel like Worf is like, that's a very human way of looking at things. Like he says that a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So it just makes, long story short, it makes sense that their religious beliefs kind of, you know, like mirror the old style Christian ones where there's a heaven, there's a hell, there's a devil that we see in TNG. And mm-hmm. bad things take you to Grethor. Good deeds take you to Stovokor. And also, it's a very Christian ideal of sins of the father, where if your father does something, like if some ancestor does something that's going to curse you for generations and curse your families for generations, and you're going to feel the repercussions for years and years. And
So it works both ways. The whole family is involved here.
Yes, absolutely. And so like, I think this all makes sense. I think it works. And one thing that I really like about Klingon religion is that it's tangible. It's something that they can do. And Worf says, is like, we don't have any gods. We killed them.
Yeah. Didn't B'Elanna say that they were, she said something about how they were more trouble than they were worth or something like that.
Well Worf said that.
Worf said that?
Like,
okay.
He's like, yeah, we killed our gods millennia ago. They were more trouble than they were worth.
Okay.
Is what he said. And I just thought that was just so interesting because I feel like Klingon religion is a mixture of Christianity and Greek mythology.
Yeah, well, I wanted to take a step even further back than the medieval times to go back to ancient Roman beliefs because I studied Latin in junior high and for part of college. And in their mythology, one thing about going to hell is that you would go down the river Styx.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that there is a boat in Barge of the Dead, that kind of has that relatable imagery where you're kind of going down the river to hell in a way. To Grethor.
And also, like, you know, with Roman and how close it is to Greek, in Greek you have the Elysian Fields where warriors go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's pretty much Stovokor. Like, you know, I know many people say, like, oh, it's heaven. But, you know, like, I think, like, the Elysian Fields, it's much closer to Stovokor than any other afterlife than I can think of.
Right. I didn't study Greek mythology nearly as much as Roman, but of what I know, I would have to agree with you.
And I'm sure that we're getting some concepts wrong or some details wrong, and I'm sure there's tons of people out there screaming at their cars right now. But we're getting the broad strokes, okay? We're getting the broad strokes.
Right. We're not necessarily scholars of this whole thing. We're doing generalities, not specifics.
Now, I read earlier that there was a Deep Space Nine episode where Worf and Martok actually find the entrance to Grethor on a Klingon planet. And,
oh, really? When was this?
Yeah, they were supposed to go in to Grethor, and they would have encountered Moog, Worf's dad.
Mm-hmm.
And they dropped it and then kind of transferred this into Barge of the Dead.
I see. Okay, and, interesting.
But how do you feel about B'Elanna actually going to Grethor? Like, it actually happening, and that they can't explain it from a medical standpoint, and like from in the real world with the doc and Janeway and Paris and everything like that, like something's happening and we don't know what's going on. How do you feel about that, not being an alien, not being a machine, but being potentially being real?
Well, I think to B'Elanna it was very real, and that's about as far as we can go. It was real to her, and that's all that mattered. And I think that is just faith in a nutshell, is if you believe, then it is real. That is your reality. And I think that's okay, because they did this in Sacred Ground, too, with Janeway, where she had to have her leap of faith.
Oh, yeah.
Where she couldn't explain things away with science, even though the doctor did in the end. She was just kind of nodding it off, though, at the very end, like, no, that's not what happened.
Yeah.
That's not how I remember it. So it's, I don't know, it's a matter of perception, if you ask me, and it was real to her. So that's where I kind of leave it. I accept that for what it is. I believe her.
For some reason, like, this episode always makes me think of Hercules, The Legendary Journeys with Kevin Sorbo. Did you ever watch that when you were younger?
I didn't watch much of it. I would occasionally catch, like, a moment or two. Like, it was always on because it was syndicated. And so I'd catch reruns constantly on the weekends. But I was never a regular viewer. But he was pretty to look at.
Well, I loved Hercules and Xena growing up, and so did my family. We watched it all the time. And there was this concept, and like, now obviously Hercules is Greek mythology and it deals with the gods and the Greek gods and everything like that.
Right. Hence Hercules.
And yeah, it's Hercules, obviously. But they had this interesting concept about how he would travel the world and not just stay in Greece, but actually go all over. And he actually made it all the way to Ireland in one arc of the show. And he, I can't remember if he died or if somebody else died or something like that. And we saw their soul ascend, but they encountered the old Celtic gods.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And Xena did this too. And I can't remember where else it was, but she was in a different location and she died. Like, all of these characters died like 20 times throughout the show.
Well, of course they did. Yeah.
And it was pretty much the rule of the show was wherever you died in the most commonly held belief was, that's where you would go. Like, so,
oh wow,
so like if she died in Puritan times in New England, she would meet the god of Abraham. But if she was in, you know, like the old Celtic times, she would meet the old Gaelic gods. And if she was in the sub-Sahara, she would meet of the Muslim faith, you know, like things like that. And so I just thought that was just a crazy concept, and I was like, oh, watch what country you die in. And and so when I thought about Barge of the Dead, when she died, I was just like, it made me kind of think back to that. I was like, okay, well, so does that mean that Stovakor is only real for Klingons? And like, and she's half Klingon. And so I like, even I'm even trying to, even though it's completely spiritual and it's just real to her, I'm trying to narrow it down saying like, well, what if she's in a different part of space? So does that matter? And she's only half Klingon. Is it genetic, you know, and everything like that. And it's just funny how like we constantly try to rationalize these things because our brains need to rationalize it. But when it comes to religion and spirituality, as well as the afterlife, there is no rationalization.
No, you really can't explain away a lot of things when it comes to simple faith, because that's what it is. Faith is not necessarily a rational response. It's, I think, an emotional response. And it's a belief that things are beyond our own explanation, which, as good as we are, I don't think we know everything.
Well, I think one of my favorite phrases and one of my favorite lines from Hamlet, which is my favorite Shakespeare play, and which I think it reigns so true, is that there is more in heaven and hell than is dreamt of in our philosophy.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
I think that reigns so true is that even if you're a hardcore believer in whatever faith you're in, there is so much more.
Oh, yeah. I absolutely do believe that. A part of my own spirituality is the fact that there probably is so much more to the whole realm of the universe. And I mean, that's such a big freaking concept as it is, than we will ever understand, because all we get is our own little perception of it and what our imagination can conjure up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that can't be everything.
And that's Picard's belief, too, to bring it back to Star Trek.
Well, there you go.
I can't remember what episode it was, but he talked about it. He's like, there's kind of two, he's like, there's two lines of thinking where you believe that your body or your spirit goes on to another place that's generally favorable, or there's nothing. A light bulb just shuts off and there's a void. He said, he's like, I believe that there is more in the universe that we don't understand, and neither of those beliefs are sufficient.
Yeah, I honestly don't know, don't want to know, and we're never going to know, because we aren't supposed to know while we are here in this state. That's my thing.
If it's good enough for Picard, it's good enough for TTJ.
That's right. Certified seal of approval. The afterlife isn't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week, and so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Really, really, really hope that if they do that, they make Chang the villain, because, you know, Captain Chang instead of General Chang or whatever, you know? I mean, that just seems like the perfect way to go.
Earl Grey.
All right, Riker, we're promoting you to captain. I mean, you killed the last captain. We usually don't reward that. That's usually not our policy, but in this case...
Well, to be fair, he had spent some time on a Klingon ship.
The Orb.
But the Federation and Bajor as a member of the Federation would be helping rebuild Cardassia. And I could see, like, very much the relationship between the U.S. and Japan today. I could see the Federation and Cardassia having that kind of relationship moving forward.
To the journey! Janeway has a very distinct pain noise?
Yeah, she
kind of does. You know what I'm talking
does.
About?
It sounds sort of like she's suffocating.
Yeah, it sounds like she's suffocating and sometimes, and I'm going to keep it clean, not always in pain. The Ready Room.
He is the best cosplayer ever because he's so buried himself in his part that we have no idea who this guy is outside of the impersonation of Tuvok.
Exactly. He's the Christian Bale of the Delta Quadrant.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
If I'm not mistaken, in any upcoming episode of Next Generation, we don't see full-grown golden retrievers running around the decks of the Enterprise. And I'm also a little worried that Captain Picard has never played with puppies.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
But you'd rather see Red in charge than him.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Right.
Because you really want Porn Stash to go down.
Yes, yes, you do. And that sentence out of context sounds really strange.
Literary Treks.
As great as Picard is and his Picard maneuver, I don't think Picard straightening his shirt is going to help him when he's going up against the Riker maneuver.
Fair enough, yeah. So.
Axanar, the official podcast.
The changes that we've made, the change to the nacelles and several other aspects of these ships to make them distinct and not the same ships as in Star Trek 2009.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are available pretty much wherever you get your podcasts these days. And none of them are possible anymore without the help of a sponsor. So let's hear a little quick bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Now, before we go, I've got to let you know about something, Tristan. Someone has a little crush on you.
I already know that, Char.
Aside from the whole Twitterverse. Pray, you know, worshiping the ISS. I mean, aside from that, somebody very blatantly said, look, I got a crush on Tristan.
Oh, really?
Yes. It is somebody who left us an iTunes review by the name of Biotech Dan, and that is our newest iTunes review in the U.S. iTunes store. Biotech Dan left us 5 stars and an excellent review, so thank you, Dan, for doing that. Because the more reviews we have, the easier it becomes for other listeners to find the podcast, and then the more listeners we get, the bigger the party. And, well, we want all the Voyager love that we can muster on TTJ. We've got a great community going. We have a good thing here. So thanks very much, Dan, for doing that. And hugs and kisses from Tristan, right?
Digital hugs and kisses, yes.
Digital hugs and kisses, yes. A little different, but it's what you can do. So anyway, yes. Thank you very much for that. If you haven't left us an iTunes review yet, you know what to do. You do that, we'll give you a shout out on the show. And if you are not in the US and you leave us an iTunes review in your respective country, please let us know of that too so that we can thank you. Now, another thing that we've got to do is thank our associate producers because we have 2 of them now. We have another one added since you took your away mission. We'd like to thank Kenneth Tripp and Lisa Stevens. And you can follow Lisa on Twitter at Flip18. If you haven't checked out Patreon, go to patreon.com/trekfm. And there's various levels of contribution that you can do to help us out and keep these shows coming to you. So please consider that if you haven't already. Thank you to those of you who are already contributing. Now, what are we doing next week?
Next week is we're doing an episode rewrite, a revamp, a reboot, a redo, however you want to call it. And it is on the episode Collective, where Harry, Paris, Neelix, and Chakotay are captured by baby Borgs. But you'll have to tune in next week to hear it. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!